What's up, everybody? Welcome to episode 94 of The Locker Room. As always, I'm your host, Johnny Lazarus. We have a great show for you today with our guest, Dr. Anthony Abene, who is a sports medicine doctor in the San Jose Sharks organization, joined by Jake Asman, Brett Hamfling, and the birthday boy, Cappy, from the mansion in Worcester, Massachusetts. Cap, what's going on, dude? Happy 2-6. Golden birthday.
Thank you. The golden birthday. We were talking about this before. I had no idea about the golden birthday, literally until my brother texted me, happy birthday, Cap. Congrats on the golden birthday.
What does that mean? Your brother calls you Cap?
No, he didn't. He doesn't call me Cap. Thanks for calling it out. Happy birthday, Justin.
I was just saying, yeah, you're like, that's weird.
Yeah. I don't know what the golden birthday entails exactly, but my mom was like, you should go put money on the numbers or something like that.
You should.
Which I didn't. Which
what
I didn't,
does that mean, golden should. Birthday?
It's so the 26th on the 26th.
Like he turned 26 on.
So when was, so have you had your golden birthday yet, Jake?
Well, yeah, my birthday is September 18th and I'm older than 18. So it's already happened. I didn't even know. I would have celebrated a lot harder that year.
Yeah. That was your freshman year of college, but, probably, right?
September 18th. Yeah. I guess that would have been freshman year of college. Wow.
Yeah. Damn.
Exactly. But it was good. It's good, boys. You know, obviously playing up here can't go too hard, but I just had a absolutely lovely dinner at some steakhouse up here. It was honestly for being up in Boston, it was one of the better steakhouses I've had. No. Like in the Worcester area, it's hard to find a nice like steakhouse. It really is.
Fair.
And we found one 4.7 stars out of 5. You know me. So I was dialed in, but shout out to my lovely girlfriend, Court, who surprised me. At the restaurant, I show up and they're like, are you Justin? I showed up with like 5 of my boys. She's like, oh yeah, you got 3 appetizers comp. We got the clams casino, the mussels, and the calamari. And wow. I go, this girl. So I obviously knew immediately it was her. She ended up paying for my whole meal. So shout out to her.
Wow. That's a power move.
Yeah,
that is a power move. That's a damn, she's fucking.
Yeah, what'd she do wrong?
She's screwing over every other girlfriend now. If I don't get my meal paid for on my birthday, if I'm not with Ellie.
Hot seat, Ellie. My God. A lot of pressure.
Yeah, no,
hot seat girlfriend in general. But it was good. It's good, boys. You know, nice chill birthday. Nothing too wild. You don't need a crazy birthday every year.
Setting the bar high.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's awesome. And do you start your season yet?
Yeah, season started. We played one game. We got another game tomorrow, actually against a few of your boys, the Adirondack. I know you got some boys over on that team. If you want to shout out some of them,
yeah,
we're playing them tomorrow.
Fellow Jew, I actually have his brother's wedding on Saturday, Nicky Rivera. Unfortunately, he can't go to the wedding because he has to play, but I got a wedding this Saturday in Connecticut that I'm excited for, so that'll be cool. Nicky Rivera. And then Ivan Chukarov and I think Jimmy Mazza you're playing against tomorrow, 3 good buddies of mine.
I'm sure you'll be absolutely wired on that to see if any of your boys – pop a few goals on Cappy, but yeah.
I'm giving them dirt on you to chirp before.
Go high on Cappy.
Hey, whoa, Brett. Don't give them Brett. Enough of that. Enough of that. Laz, you were telling us before though, what the fuck happened to you over the weekend?
Oh yeah. I went to your area, your neck of the woods, Delray in Florida to visit my grandparents. Cause you know, I haven't seen them much since the pandemic and COVID and all that stuff. My sister and her husband actually haven't seen them since their wedding, which was like 2 years ago. So flew down on Spirit Airlines, which is the worst.
Great airline.
Yeah. So the flight itself was just miserable. I sat in the middle of both of them too, which was really brutal. And the rent-a-car, we went to economy rent-a-car. So these, we just like cheaped out, like literally Spirit Airlines, economy rent-a-car, like the cheapest way you can go. So economy takes like an hour to get our car. And then 30 minutes driving on I-95 in Florida.
Yeah.
So driving on I-95, there's traffic in front of us. We slow down. And I'm just like talking to both of them. I'm in the back seat and I still don't even know what happened, but we got smacked, like literally smacked from behind, like 30 minutes after leaving.
Hey, welcome to Florida.
Like bang my head in the back window. Like actually like a bump in my head. My mouth was bleeding a little bit, like nothing serious, nothing bad. Everyone was fine. But so now we're sitting on the side of the road. It's now 1:30 in the morning and you know, I'm supposed to be at my aunt's house by 1. So, you know, we're trying not to wake them up, whatever, trying to freak anyone out. Nobody's answering the phone. So we're just sitting there. And then my brother-in-law calls the car rental service because I feel like so many people ask like, oh, I wonder what would happen if we crashed a rental car. But like, you know, like people say that, right? Like when you go away somewhere, but we did it in the first fucking 30 minutes of the trip. So like we have to call now and say, hey, we got hit, not our fault, but like we need a car for the weekend. Like, you know, please help us. So we ended up, our car was actually drivable somehow. So we drove back to economy, which is like 30 minutes back the opposite way. And then we get to economy. It's now 3:30 in the morning. And they say, hey, like we don't have another car for you. There's no cars available, but we still have to charge you for your reservation. So now we're out of car and still lose the money, and ended up Ubering from economy to my aunt's house and got there at like 4 a.m. Just like the longest travel night ever.
So what ended up happening? Like, did you guys end up getting a rental car?
No.
Does insurance cover, you know, the damage from the accident because it wasn't your fault?
Yeah, no, insurance covers it, but we still got charged for the reservation and we didn't have the rental car. So
why would you still get charged for the reservation?
I economy, dude. I don't know.
And that leads us into our
all the answers are economy.
Economy and spirit.
Sorry.
What'd you say, Cap?
I was gonna say that leads us into our OFN, Enterprise Avis.
Yeah, that would be a good one. But
that's absolute jokes. That's, I feel so bad for you, but I'm not surprised. It's typical Florida drivers. May I ask who was driving the car?
My brother-in-law. But like also there was three other accidents on 95 like before us.
Florida
drivers are nuts, man.
Unbelievable. Well, I'm glad you're healthy. I'm glad you're safe. Nothing happened.
Thank you. No, that was actually like I said I was like, dude, that was like the closest like near death experience I've had. Like it wasn't like a fender bender. Like we got smoked.
It's scary. No matter like sort of what happens, if it's in a car or any sort of bank, it's just really scary. So, you know, I'm happy you're here.
Yeah.
Mainly for the podcast.
I was thinking, like, who the fuck is going to do the intro if I can't make it? You know? But how was your guys' weekends? What did you guys do? Jake, I know it's exciting in Houston with the Astros in the World Series.
Yes, the Astros are in the World Series. Game one going on right now. Astros down 5-0 when we're recording this. So there could be a chance that it's, I don't know, Braves up 1-0 in this series. We'll see what happens by the time this episode's released. So people are really into the Astros down here. It's so weird being from New York, right? You have the Yankees and then you have the Mets, and there's a town kind of divided. Like, yeah, maybe there's more Yankee fans than Met fans, but the Met fan base is large. Like, they're very passionate, obviously. Here in Houston, the Astros are the only team. So, like, the entire city rallies around the team. Like, you can't go anywhere without people wearing Astros gear. You can't go anywhere without seeing people talking about the Astros on TV. Even the news, like news people, are just covering, you know, the Astros run. So it's a very interesting dynamic being in a big city that only has one team, because everyone kind of unites around that one team.
I'm not a big baseball guy, but it seems like the Astros are in the World Series every year.
This is the third time in the last 5 years, and this comes after, this is the first time they're in the World Series since the cheating scandal revelations happened after 2019. Now, the 2019 team wasn't accused of cheating, but people lumped that in with the 2017 team. So in a way, if they were to win this World Series, it's almost vindication for the players that are still on the team from that 2017 title, because they could prove that, yeah, they cheated and what they did was wrong, but they proved that they were also really good at baseball, because here they are years later winning again.
The Astros got so – we're not going to get deep into this. They got so lucky with the pandemic season with no fans last year. They were going to go into a ballpark every single night and get booed and get garbages hit. It just – you know, too much time. You know, people still don't like them, but too much time. You can't hold that hatred forever. But, yeah, they got lucky.
I already forgot it happened.
See, exactly.
Yeah. But then again, I'm not really a baseball fan.
It's they definitely lucked out with that. And then also because of like another offseason goes by, like more and more players that were on that team leaving free agency too. So it's an interesting dynamic. Obviously, there's going to be people that will always, you know, bring up the cheating scandal. But I mean, I think over time people do move on, especially because they've proven they're just a really good team with or without cheating.
Yeah, no, 100%. I've been following a little bit. I do like watching the postseason, but from everything it sounds like, this Braves run has been incredible. So I'm rooting for the Braves to win. And Jake, I know you found an article today and wanted to talk about this series having like so many Jewish players, which is really cool to watch.
Yeah, this is the World Series that will feature more Jewish players that will appear in the series than ever before.
Yep.
I was reading an article about this, and we're talking about a World Series here that has Jewish teammates. If you look at the Atlanta Braves, Max Fried, who's a pitcher who will start game two of this World Series. So when you listen to this podcast, he's the guy that's starting tonight for Atlanta. He's Jewish. He actually was bar mitzvahed. Then you look at Jock Peterson. I believe he's half Jewish. He's an outfielder on the Atlanta Braves. So you got Jewish teammates there. Then on the Astros, Alex Bregman, their starting third baseman, He's Jewish, and he also had a bar mitzvah. And unfortunately, the Astros have a third string catcher named Garrett Stubbs. He's Jewish too, but he didn't make the World Series roster. So you could have had as many as four Jewish baseball players in the series, but you do have three that will appear in the World Series. So that's the most in World Series history. Pretty cool.
And can you think of anything better to sell or a better way to celebrate winning the World Series than to come on the Locker Room Podcast? Like, we got to get one of these guys. We got to get one of these guys after the series ends. We've talked a little bit to Jock Peterson's like agent and stuff. So hopefully we can make that happen, you know, after the run, unless he's like, you know, too much of a hotshot, because that guy is pretty popular. What's up, Cap?
No, I was going to say, I didn't know Fried was Jewish, to be honest with you. So, and you know me, I'm not the biggest baseball guy either. And I don't bet baseball because of that. Because I feel like I don't know enough about like the players on each roster.
I thought you said you don't bet baseball because Fried's Jewish.
No. But now I'm kidding. Specifically saying I am hammering the Braves because Fried is pitching tomorrow. Yeah. Hey, and if you want to hammer them yourselves too, you know where to go. And that's Underdog Fantasy, baby. Get over to Underdog Fantasy right now. And let's talk about them for a second. Underdog Fantasy is the best and easiest place to play. To play fantasy for big cash prizes. On Underdog Fantasy, you just draft. No need to worry about waivers, lineups, or injuries. Underdog handles it all for you. Go to UnderdogFantasy.com or download the app. Draft a season-long best ball team, and that's it. No in-season management. They're going to give you $25 when you sign up, so you can take a free shot at a $1 million fantasy grand prize. That's right. You can get a free $25 in bonus cash on Underdog Fantasy if you use the code LATKE, that's LATKE, when you make your first deposit. I personally love Underdog so much because it's just so easy to use. The mobile app is slick. The website is user-friendly, so do what I've been doing. Go to UnderdogFantasy.com, join a league, draft a team, and that's it. Remember, UnderdogFantasy.com, the App Store or Google Play Store, and use our code LATKE, L-A-T-K-E, and get free $25 in bonus cash.
Cap, I want to transition into your restaurant complaining, because it's one of my pet peeves. I fucking hate people who complain at restaurants. So we haven't eaten together out in a long time, but you got to tell me what this is all about.
That's perfectly fine. So I kind of had like two back-to-back bad experiences. And you know what? I'm not one of those guys that complains on a consistent basis. And I think I've talked about this multiple times on the podcast, that I don't care how much money I'm spending when it comes to eating or anything like that. Like, it doesn't matter. I can go to a steakhouse back to back. If I'm eating good, I'm eating good, and I want it to be good. So I go to this one restaurant with a couple of my boys the night before, and I'm going to try and make this as quick as possible, regardless of the situation. Our food didn't come out for like a good hour and a half. It was extremely bad. Like, we weren't getting shit. So I basically just told them like to, you know, put it to go and let us get out of here. But like, when I was talking to the waitress, like all the boys were like turning the other way. They like couldn't like look at me. Yeah. Like, so let's fast forward to the following day. We go to Chipotle, one of our favorite places, boys, of all time. Mm-hmm. Oh, Jake just turned his head. He was watching the game. He just said, bam, Chipotle. What are we saying here? So we go to Chipotle. We're in line. And probably about five of the boys in line. I'm second towards the register after getting our bowls, our burritos, whatever we were getting. My good friend in front of me asked for a cup of water, the classic cup of water. Mm-hmm. For some strange reason, they say that the water, the filter's bad in the water. We're not giving out cups of water today. Okay, that's fine. So I buy a fountain drink because mm-hmm. I need a drink with my bowl. I can't eat Chipotle without a fountain drink. Come on now. I go over. Hold on. Go over and I'm looking, I'm saying, why is the water? It doesn't say out of order or anything like that. So I click the water button. It's flowing like absolute Fiji down there. I'm talking Fiji water. I taste it. Tastes phenomenal. So I go back over there and I go, excuse me, the water's flowing fine. Are you sure it's something's wrong with it? Because I feel like if there was something wrong with it, you should probably put out of order so people don't know to go over there and probably get sick from drinking filthy water. Meanwhile, I find out that the water's completely fine, and they lied to me, and they've been lying to people because that they caught people using cups of water to fill up with soda and not water.
Oh. Yeah, that's what everyone does.
So I absolutely lost it. I absolutely lost it on this lady because I was right. I'm like, well, if your water's messed up, then you're going to get people sick, but now you're just lying to me. So it was a whole debacle, especially at Chipotle. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it was, of course, like the boys were looking at me like I'm an absolute psychopath Jew. Like, oh God, we got to go out to dinner with this kid.
Well, no, Chipotle, I feel like for a little bit had clear cups because people were doing that. I mean, I used to do that all the time. I would get the water cup and I fill it with root beer all the time.
Yeah. So exactly. My philosophy on it was, if you're going to charge me extra for guac, then I'm getting a drink for free. Now, yeah. We could argue whether or not that's ethical or not, but I don't think I should be charged $2 and change extra for guac. I find that absurd. So yeah. that's how I strike back.
But it's such an easy solution. Yeah. If you want to avoid that, just give out clear cups for water cups.
Like, exactly. They used to do that, but they seemingly have stopped doing that.
Yeah.
I'm with all of you right now on the fact of that. I'm just bringing up the fact that I'm just having a bad day, and I'm the guy who's like, I don't give a fuck. Like, I'll complain to the people. Like, I don't like to do it. I don't enjoy doing it, mm-hmm. but I'll do it.
Yeah.
You know, when it's mandated.
You've got a little Karen in you.
Yeah. I was going to say, are we going to see you on the internet? Like, headline, man goes nuts at Chipotle over water cup.
You ever seen the Yelp review South Parkers, Boogers and Cum?
Which one?
No,
or like the I'm Yelp, you gotta watch that one.
Oh, when it's like everyone's a Yelp reviewer.
Yeah, and then they have the song at the end where they're like the Yelp reviewers come in. They're like, "I'm a Yelp reviewer." And they're like, "I'm gonna make it very special for you." And in the back, they're like, "Boogers had come." And just putting all that in the food.
I remember that. I remember that episode. That was a good episode.
Yeah. So that's my daily debacle, boys. But hopefully we'll be better. And I mean, like I said, I went to dinner last night for my birthday. And the steakhouse was phenomenal. I did not even say a goddamn word. Yeah. Couldn't even. I was speechless.
Yeah, that's awesome.
You deserve it. You know, the season's here. You're going to be, you know, grinding it out, trying to win another Kelly Cup. You deserve a nice birthday where you get to enjoy some good steaks and some good company.
I am. And the ring's coming in soon. I saw that the four-way comments debuted their rings, and they look absolutely gorgeous. So I'm excited to get mine and see
it. We'll have to post that on our page. We'll post it on our page.
Guys, so did you see this Tom Brady story? So he threw his 600th career touchdown pass against the Bears on Sunday. Now, obviously, Tom Brady's the only quarterback to have ever thrown 600 touchdown passes, so it's a very significant milestone. And Mike Evans, the receiver who caught the ball, didn't realize it was Brady's 600th touchdown, so he gave it to a random fan, like in the first row at the game. So obviously, Mike Evans realized, oh, crap, I screwed up. I gave away a ball that is, you know, worth, you know, a lot of money. But obviously, Tom's going to want it for his own, you know, personal collection. So the Bucks negotiated a deal with this fan that got the ball, and the fan gave it back. And you tell me if you think the fan got enough in return for a ball that was estimated to be worth, let's say, like $500,000. That's what I've seen quoted out there. Yeah. So keep that in mind. So this fan who gave the ball back to Brady received two signed Brady jerseys and a helmet, a signed Mike Evans jersey and his game cleats, $1,000 to the Bucks team store, two season passes for the rest of this season and next season. And this is the last thing that was in the deal to sweeten it. Tom Brady revealed on the Manning cast last night on ESPN2's Monday Night Football with Eli and Peyton that he's giving the fan a Bitcoin, which right now is worth, I believe, $65,000 or so. I'm not really in the Bitcoin space, but I look at all that and I say, you know what? It's still a pretty good deal for a fan who's a Bucks fan that ended up doing the right thing, giving it back to Brady. But I understand there's plenty of people saying, no, screw that. He should have kept the ball. He should have sold it and made as much money as possible. So I'm curious, where do you guys stand? Did the fan get enough, or should he have kept the ball and sold it on the open market and made even more money?
Two things. One, I just think it's funny how they threw this like Bitcoin into it. Like it's a thing. It's just money. Like Bitcoin is whatever. What is it? $60,000. So $60,000 on top. Two, I have a question. I don't understand how this ball is worth $500,000. First of all, it's not his last touchdown ever. It's not the touchdown where he passed Drew Brees to all time, you know, most touchdowns in NFL history. 600 is just a round number. There might be a 650, probably not going to be a 700, or maybe there could be. And I saw that the Deflategate ball sold for $20,000, I think, like 10 years ago. I feel like there's more like importance and significance in that. I really don't get why this ball is worth $500,000. It's just a number, a round number.
I don't get why any fucking sports object is worth any kind of money.
But that's a different question. That's a different question. Like,
no, yeah.
It's not his last touchdown ever. Like,
I'm with you, Brett. You have 100% of a valid point. I didn't think of it like that, to be honest with you. But from a standpoint from Jake, from what you were saying, I see both sides of it. Like one side of me is like, man, like, yeah, let me take that ball. Let me, you know, let me get that 500K, or let me sit on it for a year and maybe get even more if that's what it's actually retailing for. Because I did see that too, which is absolutely sickening. And then on the other hand, I was also thinking, like, man, this guy was probably just loaded at the time and was just like, yeah, I'll throw you the ball back, buddy, right now. Like, not even thinking about it. Like, yeah, take it. We'll negotiate something else. Yeah, I'll get something. But then again, I do think that they did give him a good amount. But thinking of, like, the, if it's 500K, like, what does this add up to? You know, 200K tops, maybe with the two season tickets. And the, but then at the same time, he's looked at as a very nice guy for giving the ball back. I'm sure the organization is going to see him at the games and stuff like that. Maybe they know him now. Maybe they'll slide him some more perks over the way. But yeah, I mean, I see it from both angles.
He also, if he like says no to that negotiation, he's known as the biggest asshole on the planet. Like, who would not give Tom Brady his 600th touchdown pass ball? Like, if that was me and I caught, like, if I got somehow like Henrik Lundqvist's like record setting puck, like I would want him to have it. Like any fan, I feel like. No, like, I feel like any fan would want their like favorite player to have their possession, you know, it
depends. So I remember when Derek Jeter hit his 3,000th home run, the fan that caught it, or his 3,000th hit, I should say, was a home run. So when Jeter hit the home run and the fan that caught it, I remember his name was Christian Vasquez. He gave the ball back to Jeter because like he is a diehard Yankees fan, diehard Derek Jeter fan. And the Yankees gave him, you know, signed gear. Jeter signed him a bunch of stuff. I'm like, all right, like I get it. Like if you're a diehard fan of the team, I guess it's tough with this without knowing like how big of a Bucks fan is this guy. And then the other thing is too, like, I understand giving it back. I got no issue with what he did, but I also understand the counter argument of, well, this guy paid good money to be at the Bucks game. Right. So it's his right to then take that ball and make as much money as he wants with it. Right. I mean, it's not like he was there for free. And it's not like he reached over and had to dive for this football over other people. Like Mike Evans handed him the ball. So I could honestly, like, I'm riding the fence hard right now because I could see both sides. But I feel like if this fan wanted to take the ball and sell it for as much money as possible, he'd be in his right to do it because it's not like he did anything wrong in obtaining this football in the first place.
Yeah. But I mean, you got to look at it as if like this guy was just literally handed so much shit for luck. It's like your point exactly. It's not like he dove over and actually caught the ball and like earned the ball. It was just handed to him. If he made a sick catch, like if someone like, you know, caught the Derek Jeter home run, if someone like made a sick grab to get that ball, or like, I'm sure I actually remember watching like the David Freese walk off home run ball. Like five people ran into that little patch of grass in Busch Stadium and like tried to tackle each other for that ball. Like this guy just had it handed to him, so he's just like getting all this shit handed to him for free. I wouldn't be complaining if I was him.
Also, did you guys see? So the guy who caught the ball, he was on ESPN, and they were asking him like, "What do you want? Like, what's your negotiation?" He's like, "I don't want much. I just want to play a round of golf with Tom Brady."
Yeah,
and he wasn't like joking. Like I was like monetary wise, that's not a huge deal, but like Tom doesn't like really want to like give 5 hours of his day to play with you. Like he's playing with like Obama and people and Michael Jordan. And this guy's like, yeah, I like Tom rather throw the guy $100,000 probably than have to like play with him. I just thought it was funny. He was like, I just want to play golf with Tom. Like he like, it wasn't a big deal.
I was thinking too, on the flip side of that, if Mike Evans, or if this guy didn't give the ball back, like I'm trading Mike Evans from every fantasy team known to man. Like Tom Brady's not throwing to this guy anymore. You know what I mean? Like that just ruins the morale in the locker room instantly. But it's pretty funny. On that note, you guys want to get into a little OFN action?
Yeah, let's do it.
Who won last week? Because that's who goes first.
I think it might have been Al, but Al's not here.
Oh no.
So
is there a winning?
It's sent back to Asman.
Is there a winning?
We usually like, I feel like we'll vote on who has the best, you know, take or best overall idea about everything. And usually it's Asman, but I think last week it was Al.
Well, guys, if it is me, today's OFN is a very good one. It features three prominent actors in the comedy space: Kevin James, David Spade, and Rob Schneider. And without further ado, let's get into it. My once is Rob Schneider, and I like a lot of his movies. So with Rob Schneider, Benchwarmers, one of my favorite movies. I laugh every time I see it. And for that reason alone, I got to put him as my once. Because when I think about Rob Schneider in comparison to my never, you'll see why I did what I did. So before I get to the never, though, it's OFN. So forever comes next. And my forever is Kevin James. I mean, come on. Kevin James, King of Queens, all the movies he's been in. You can make fun of him for Paul Blart Mall Cop, but that guy's going to be laughing at you all the way to the bank. He got not one, but two movies out of that character. So good for Kevin James. I'm just a big Kevin James fan. I don't know. I think he's funny. Maybe because I'm very biased. I love the show, you know, that he was on, obviously, the great sitcom. So Kevin James is my forever. And then my never is David Spade. I don't know, man. Like, I look at David Spade's career and he's been in some funny things, but I can't think of like one standalone movie that David Spade's in that I'm like, yep, that's great. Like even Tommy Boy that he stars in, like that to me is more of a Chris Farley movie than necessarily a David Spade movie. So
might be Benchwarmers.
You know, Benchwarmers is good. And obviously David Spade is in it. But I consider that movie more Rob Schneider than David Spade. So it's tough. It wasn't easy. But once Rob Schneider, forever Kevin James, never David Spade.
Asmin, as always, phenomenal elaboration. You guys are missing a great David Spade movie, which is Joe Dirt, which is probably one of his classics, probably one of his only good ones. But with that being said, I'm going to go David Spade as my never. And it's going to be pretty similar to Jake, to be honest with you. You got to go David Spade as your never, specifically because like he doesn't just have any specific movies that he is the main character in where he highlights. And I think he's that funny. Like you mentioned, Tommy Boy and Joe Dirt are classics and they're great. When you compare them to the other two actors that we are going to be talking about, it just doesn't compare in my book. And with that being said, my forever is going to be Kevin James. he all around just so good. And when I'm looking for like the roles he's been in and the movies that he's been in, those are movies and roles that I'm going to want to watch forever compared to these other two people. And with that being said, my once is going to be Rob Schneider, because you can do it and I'm going to be doing it. No, he's a classic. And he's in the Adam Sandler movies, from like one of his like side guys, I feel like he's my favorite from that standpoint. So yeah, that's going to be mine.
I'm going to keep this short. And, for whatever reason, I don't know why, Rob Schneider has never really done it for me.
Wow.
I know. I don't know why. He just hasn't really done it. So he's been my never. David Spade, I loved, and Joe Dirt, Dickie Roberts.
Roberts. Yep, Dickie Roberts. That's my childhood.
I kind of need to see that movie. I haven't seen that movie in probably 14 years, maybe.
Holy shit, a bike. Out.
It's so good. And it's a movie I actually completely forgot about, just like out of my brain until I started thinking about this. Mm-hmm. And then obviously he's in, Benchwarmers. David Spade's funny. He's a good actor. And Kevin James, easy, my always. I'm thinking Hitch, Chuck and Larry. He just cracks me up. I think he also lives in Roslyn now. Yeah. That's an easy one for me.
So... I might be the complete opposite from all you guys, kind of. I like, for me right now, when we first started this, Kevin James was my never. I never really watched the show. What's it called again?
King of Queens.
Yeah. I've never watched it. I've
so
seen,
good.
I've seen Paul Blart. I've seen him in Chuck and Larry, which I do love Chuck and Larry, and Hitch, but I only really know him from Chuck and Larry and Hitch and like the Grown Ups movies. I don't really know him for much else. Like Dickie Roberts for me was one of my favorite movies growing up with David Spade. Like I love that movie. So I'm saying my never is Kevin James, and my once is David Spade, because I've always just felt like I've resonated with him more. And then for me, Rob Schneider. I think The Hot Chick is one of the most underrated movies of all time. I love that movie with Rob Schneider. It's so fucking funny. And Jake, I saw you smile. That's probably a movie that people forget about, with Rachel McAdams and Anna Faris. Just a great movie, The Hot Chick.
Underrated too, Deuce Bigelow, European Gigolo.
Yep, Deuce Bigelow, European Gigolo. The amount of times though The Hot Chick is like quoted amongst my friend group is so funny. Like every time I order a drink, I don't know if you guys remember the scene where in The Hot Chick he orders a drink at the bar and that bartender just like eyes him down every time he fucking talks. He says like, "I'll take a virgin extra sugar on the rim, yum," something like that. I don't know, but like my friend Chase always does that when he orders a drink. So it's kind of
you're gonna have to learn that line if you're gonna have say it.
I know. I thought I knew it, and then I started talking, and I was like, I don't know what the quote is at all. But I'll take a screaming orgasm on the beach, yum, something like that. So yeah, for me, Rob Schneider is my forever.
Love it. Good job, boys. Another great one. I guess we'll see who wins next week. I think we all did well. Maybe have to sit on it.
Well, we'll post it on the story, and we'll see what people think.
Yeah, for for sure. Love it. On that note, do you think we should kick it over to the interview? What do you think?
Yeah, let's send it to Doc. This guy grew up in Woodbridge, New Jersey, and was born and raised Catholic, but is currently in the process of being bar mitzvahed. He's a certified orthopedic surgeon with a certificate of added qualifications in sports medicine. I looked it up. That's what the bio said. He was the hockey team doctor at the 2017 Maccabee Games for the team that I played for in Israel, and is currently the team doctor in the NHL for the San Jose Sharks and for the San Jose Barracuda of the AHL. Really happy to have him here. Welcome to the podcast, Dr. Anthony Abene. What's up, Doc?
Hey, guys. That's how's it going?
You cannot say what's up, Doc. Like, you cannot. But I think we should start right off the bat with the process of being bar mitzvah, because we've actually had a current NHL player on here, Nate Thompson, definitely over a year ago. And you know, it was really cool to hear his journey converting to Judaism, or as Cappy says, transferring. But Doc, what's your story? You know, obviously your wife is Jewish. You've been to Israel. You know, what's the process like right now?
Yeah, so my that it all started with my wife. I met my wife first day of college, and you know, when we got married, we decided we were going to raise kids Jewish, and so I wanted to be a quick learner. Being Catholic, it's actually not that hard. you kind of already know all the stories and everything. Mm-hmm. I got thrown in almost immediately because I'd never met my father-in-law. He had passed away. And I got introduced to my family. And even though there was already a brother, I guess they considered him too young. So I was the oldest male. So they said, yeah, you're running the Seder. So I had to learn real quick. And I've been told I run a very good Seder, you know, so it's quick, it's short, it's to the point, you know, and you get to eat. So I get the highlights.
What's your favorite Jewish food, honestly, since we're at it?
Like, you know, I knew that question was coming up.
I know I'm in a minority here. I love gefilte fish.
Yeah. Dude, okay, wait, can we pause for a second? Because so my girlfriend, long time, is Catholic. 9 years, and her favorite food at the Jewish table is gefilte fish. So maybe it's like a transitioning thing. We got to find this out.
No full Jew actually likes it. I feel like I've never met anyone besides, you know, the other people who like it. I was at a breakfast and someone put like gefilte on a bagel, and I was like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, that's
well, insane. I can't, I mean, like, I don't understand the jelly. That to me is gross. Uh-huh. You know, you got to get it in the broth. You can't do it in the jelly. I don't even know who thought of that, but
yeah. Well, can you also go back to tell us how you met your wife, like in college? Is it like a funny meet cute story or just typical?
Yeah, it was actually on my birthday. Uh-huh. Okay. I had just turned 18, and this was at Rutgers University in New Brunswick, New Jersey. Mm-hmm. And the funny story, you know, you immediately, as soon as you get to college, first day of college, you know, you meet all your dorm buddies and you walk around like in packs, right? The freshman packs. And we went to this one event where they were doing Simon Says, and, you know, we were all too cool to do it. And I saw my wife, and I'm with this group of guys, and I pointed at her. I go, you see that girl over there? They're like, yeah. I go, that's going to be my wife.
No way.
Yeah. Yeah. And
so cocky.
I guess. Well, I stalked her for about 2 years, and then we started dating. We've been together since 1986. So,
wow.
Congratulations. Yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah, that is amazing. That's awesome. I need to hear, just because, you know, I met you obviously in the Maccabee games, but how were you kind of tagged as the team doctor for Maccabee? How'd you get involved with Maccabee? And what do you think of Israel as someone who's not Jewish?
Well, I mean, first of all, it was fantastic. You know, that was a really big trip. I was so excited to do it. My oldest boy, who goes to USC, there's a Trojan jersey over there.
Yeah, you got the locker room set up.
Which I call the world's most expensive hockey jersey. he's playing club at USC right now. He's actually the president of the club. But
wow,
I can't remember how we found out about it, but Jake tried out. He was in high school, so he made the junior team. Mm-hmm. And I had met Phil, got to know Phil and Dev, and you know, at the time I was already working with the Sharks. The Barracuda hadn't come out to San Jose yet, and volunteered to be a team doc, and ended up, you know, covering mostly hockey. Did a lot of other stuff too because they needed me all around. So I had a rental car and I was going back and forth. I did some soccer, I did some water polo, but stuck with the hockey team most of the time. And brought my little guy out with me. And he was young back then, and he's going now and on the open team. But he volunteered and was like the gopher with cheese. He was helping sharpen skates. He was helping video stuff. He was pushing pucks, you know, and he was helping out with, he was on the bench filling water bottles and everything. And now he's getting to go as a player. So he's excited. Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. I remember him rocking the Sharks hat the whole trip.
I got to make a comment on that USC jersey. That's probably one of the teams that needs to go to Division I soon.
Yeah.
You know, we talk about out here in California, the AHL moved out here 6 years ago. So we went from having three pro teams, you know, Ducks, Kings, and Sharks. And I distinctly remember the day they announced the Sharks, and I was growing up in New Jersey, I go, where is San Jose? And do they even know what hockey is? And now we've got the three NHL teams, and we've got the Gulls, the Rain, the Oilers team, which is the Condors.
Yeah, Bakersfield.
We've got the Heat, and we've got the Stockton Heat, and we've got the Barracuda, and then Palm Springs is going to be the Seattle team.
Oh, really? And Palm Springs?
Palm Springs
is sick. Yeah, Cappy, you got to get there, man.
They're building the arena right now, and then, you know, I think if you throw in Henderson for Vegas and you throw in Tucson for the Coyotes, and all of a sudden now you've got, you know, another seven pro teams out here, but we don't have any junior teams and we don't have an NCAA teams. Actually, if you want to look up history of hockey, there's a good Sports Illustrated article. Go look up. It talks about USC and LMU back in the 30s were powerhouses for hockey. And actually Minnesota came out and played three games against USC, and USC trounced them I think 28. Well, it wasn't, none of those guys were California guys. They were all, the USC guy was going to take guys, players. He was going to get players from Minnesota, and the LMU guy was going to get players from Canada and basically come in like, hey guys, you want to freeze or you want to come down and play here? LMU had a really good team. They wanted to build a football team because they took one of the assistant coaches from Newt Rockne. And they really wanted to build a football team, and he needed something to do during the winter, so he coached the hockey team.
Did you play hockey as a kid? Like, were you a stud or what? Because obviously that's what you do now. Like, hockey's, I feel like, is your first love.
No. I mean, I played a little bit. I mean, I really didn't. There weren't many rinks in New Jersey at the time, and the guys who played hockey were all at the kind of private schools. Mm-hmm. So I played, and there were no rollerblades. There were the four skates.
Like
so
So
there was no roller hockey. So I mean, if you've ever heard of deck hockey,
I played
deck hockey for as serious as you can get for deck hockey. You know, I was on a travel team and we'd play, but it wasn't real hockey.
Well, I mean,
I have no idea.
Well, I say that because I mean, you currently obviously are working with, you know, the San Jose Sharks and the Sharks organization, and you love working with hockey athletes specifically. But I know you've worked with like football players in the past, like individually. I read something about a San Francisco player or something along the lines of that.
When I did my fellowship, I worked with the Niners and the Giants,
which is unreal. I want you to, you know, go into detail about that as well. But I'm curious to why you stuck with like working with hockey players more so than maybe going to like a football organization or something.
Isn't that a given?
I mean,
don't get me wrong. I mean, like, they're all wonderful athletes and everything, but there's something about hockey players. Yeah. You know, the majority of these guys are the most humble guys in the world. Half of them are Canadian farm boys. They're just, I don't know. they're just great guys. I've yet to meet a hockey player with any kind of ego. I remember when they went on strike, the last strike, and I said, the owners are always going to win because hockey players will play hockey.
Yeah.
Like, even if they're not getting paid, I go, every one of these guys in this locker room, if there was no more pro hockey, would be playing hockey tomorrow because it's in their blood, you know? Yeah. And I think that sets it, you know, I don't think guys playing football are going to do that, you know?
No, that definitely makes sense. 100%. I've definitely seen some egotistical people though in my days. I feel like that in all sports.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the best guys, you got to have a little bit of chip on your shoulder to be really good. But for the most part, I just love the hockey guys. I love the hockey culture. You know, it's really enjoyable.
So, Doc, hockey guys are obviously known to be tough guys, you know, some of the toughest athletes in the world. Is that sort of a misnomer? Is that sort of, you know, a false, you know, a false character trait? Do you notice a significant difference of, you know, maybe how they fight through injuries versus other sports, or is that not really?
I think hockey guys are tough. They have to be, you know, to go through. I've watched guys play through injuries that I don't think the average athlete in another sport would do, you know. My perfect example of a guy, and if he played his entire career on the East Coast, I mean, I know he's already famous and everything, but Joe
Jumbo.
Thornton.
Yep.
Jumbo, in my opinion, I mean, if he had played in New York or Toronto or stayed in Boston, he would be uttered in the same sentences as Ovechkin and those guys.
Mm-hmm.
He's the ultimate locker room guy. He doesn't do anything. He doesn't ask him anything from anybody else that he wouldn't do himself. He better be like dead or dying to not go on the ice. I mean, just a fantastic leader. And obviously, I mean, he's going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
I just don't think he gets the notoriety and credit that he really should get. He needs to go down as one of the greatest hockey players of all time.
He's definitely up there with one of them. I mean, I could definitely attest to that. I met him for the first time this summer. I was skating with the Panthers during a couple practices. I was out with them for like a month. And all of a sudden, randomly, this big guy with a beard steps on the ice. And I'm like, you got to be shitting me. There's no
way. he's so humble. Oh, he's hilarious.
Yeah, he is. He is. But it's funny because I'm keeping to myself. I'm a goalie, so I'm not talking to him. But during the intermission, we were zamboning the ice, just sitting on the bench, just like, you know, tapped him on the thing like, hey, like glad you're with Florida. Like, it's going to be great to see you in the Panther. Was talking to me for like a good 15 minutes, told me he's going on vacation with his kids, tell me all his whole life story. I just met the guy in 5 seconds.
Yeah, no, that's Jumbo.
I actually wanted to ask you about two friends of mine that I played in college with, Mario Ferraro and John Leonard. I don't know if you had the chance to work with them. Hopefully not, I guess, right?
So a little bit, and that actually kind of leads into, you know, COVID's been a little strange.
Yeah.
You know, we don't interact too much with it. It's been a weird couple of years. So I'm assistant with the Sharks, and when the CUDA came out, I became the head guy for the CUDA.
The CUDA, I like that.
even with the CUDA, I mean, it's been like for the last, since COVID,
mm-hmm.
I'm barely in the locker room.
Oh, really?
You know, there's not been much interaction just because we've all been kind of separated. So it's been hard to get to know the players very well. I actually, I know Leonard a little bit, actually from his dad, because my son played for the Rifles.
Uh-huh.
and played a little bit with the younger brother.
Yeah, he's nasty.
Who's apparently a stud too.
Yeah.
So I got to know that family a little bit.
Yeah, great guys. But I guess that's something cool too. I mean, for your kids, you have two sons, right?
Yeah, I have two sons and a daughter.
For all three of your kids, I imagine, you know, you were able to bring them to the rink and have them interact with players growing up. Like, how cool is that for you as a parent to watch them interact with professional athletes? And now I know your son Max is kind of going through that like recruiting process. He's playing at Deerfield, the prep school on the East Coast. So, you know, just for him growing up, I guess also specifically, like, how awesome was it for you as a parent to have, you know, your kids around such high class role model type athletes?
No, you know, it's great. Sharks Ice, where they play. I mean, you know, it's funny. They get so much access to these guys.
Mm-hmm.
Not even just my relationship, notwithstanding, that they almost just take it for granted.
Yeah.
You know, I remember there was an autograph signing and there was people lined up and there were a few Sharks that were retired Sharks, but my son had full access to these guys. They would come out and coach and everything. And he goes, Dad, why is there a huge line over there? And I go, well, those people are waiting online to get their autograph. And he's like, why? I'm like, well, Max, these guys are famous to them. I mean, you have access to these guys all the time, but like, they don't.
Just my dad's work friends.
Yeah.
That's so funny.
I'm actually curious. So are you a big movie guy?
Old movies. In fact, I've had recent conversations. I actually just had one with my daughter and her boyfriend when I found out that they never saw Rocky and never saw a few other movies I rattled out. I'm like, oh my God, I did not raise you properly.
All right, well, I doubt you're going to see this then. The movie Trainwreck. Amy Schumer was in it.
Absolutely.
What's the main guy's actor last?
Bill Hader.
Bill Hader. I actually have a little video clip I keep on my phone about the comedian making fun of sports medicine doctors.
Well, beautiful. Well, I mean, it kind of brings me up to my question. I don't know if you remember the scene, like his like song while he was performing surgery was Uptown Girl. That's like what he would play. So like, I mean, do you have like a pump up song when you're, you know, working on people or anything like that? Like what's your go-to?
When I used to do a lot of trauma, which I don't do anymore, it was always heavy metal. I mean, yeah, when you're rotting a femur, you can't, you know, you're not playing Barry Manilow. So I play a lot of Rage Against the Machine, a lot of Metallica. You know,
I'd be like drumming on the body I'm working on.
but now it's mostly country.
So I mean, obviously in the movie, like he's actually like performing on somebody while Uptown Girl's playing in the background. Yeah. So you're telling me, like, is that actually what happens in some like some surgical rooms or whatever it's called? Like,
we have music metal going.
Bumping while you're like hands in somebody's
organs? You know, when you're working in the trauma center, yeah, I mean, you need to do that because it's good for everybody involved because when somebody gets in a big car accident and you got to put them together, it's almost like going to battle and being on the field. You got to get in the mood to do what, if you took a step back is brutal. It's you're putting together people's bones and everything like that. And it lets you kind of almost forget about what you're doing and make it more palatable, I guess.
I thought you were going to say fun.
No, it's absolutely amazing. Like, I mean, what you guys do is absurd, but I'm just picturing like, we got a severed body, get the Metallica going, baby.
Like, I don't play the heavy metal anymore. And my room is actually pretty quiet. I have a few trauma docs who they're definitely, if you go by their room, the door's rattling.
That's pretty funny.
Can you tell us without names like the craziest injury you've seen? I guess that they're out like maybe with in a sport, like, from a sports standpoint.
I was actually, before I became working with the Sharks, I volunteered to be the team physician for San Jose State's club team, and I would sit in the stands and I one of the players went into the boards pretty hard and came off the ice and was holding his arm, and I'm like, oh man, he probably dislocated his shoulder, so I'm probably gonna have to pop it back in. Went into the locker room, and when I got to the locker room, I realized it wasn't his shoulder, it was his elbow, and he had fractured above his elbow, and he had what's called a supracondylar humerus fracture, and
of course
kind of had two elbows for a while until we got it all splinted up, and I ended up fixing it. And that's one of the interesting things about being a sports medicine doctor compared to being almost every other doctor. So I actually oftentimes will witness the event that leads to the surgery.
Yeah.
Which doesn't happen for me. You know, cardiothoracic surgeons aren't really sitting around watching people have a heart attack, you know, but oftentimes I'm physically there and the witness of the injury. Yeah.
Which is a huge benefit.
Yeah.
Oftentimes it is. Yeah.
It's like watching film.
Yeah. Right. Honestly.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to ask you about, The game 7 with Joe Pavelski against Vegas, were you in the building for that game? And like, that was really scary too when he went down. And then, you know, all of a sudden that entire game takes a full, I guess, 180.
Yeah, no, I was there. It was, you know, quite the game, you know, and the guys rallied, you know, that was really what happened, was the guys rallied for the captain.
Yeah.
100%.
That was like one of the best nights in sports I remember. Cause while that was going on, Brett, I don't know if you know about this game, but the Sharks came back from down like 3-0 in the last 10 minutes of a game 7 on a controversial penalty. But also on that night was the Dame Lillard, like half court buzzer beater when he waved goodbye to the Thunder. That was like a sick sports night.
I was watching that one.
Yeah. I figured you were watching the basketball instead of the hockey, but Doc, are you ever going to come back to the East Coast? I know you're from Jersey. You've been out in San Jose for a long time. Is there a certain team you want to work with?
You know, my youngest guy is out there, and I think he's probably going to be out there for a while. So, that's actually given me an opportunity. Even though I grew up in Jersey, we never had an excuse to go to Boston. Mm-hmm. So I've been learning a lot about Massachusetts and spending more time in Massachusetts and, you know, going to the Cape and going to Boston. And I'm enjoying my New England experience.
Yeah.
You know, given that there's a high likelihood he's going to stay and play hockey on the East Coast just because that's where most of the game, most of the teams are. So I have a feeling I'm probably going to be coming back for another 5-6 years. Don't know if I'll ever move back. still have family in New Jersey and New York, but I don't know. California's nice.
You're definitely going to have to let me know when you're out here. I know you're coming out this weekend, but it's pretty crazy that because I'm with the Worcester Railers this year and the Worcester Sharks. Honestly, I just found out today. I was kind of hyping you up to my team doctor. I told her who we're having on tonight, and she said, oh, well, ask him about the Worcester Sharks because they were here, and I had no idea they were even a team, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's really neat the AHL is out here. I mean, it's and we're really excited too. So we're one of the few teams that plays in the same building with our NHL team.
Mm-hmm.
And Doug uses that team kind of as a fourth line. Both the reward guys and the punish guys, I guess. You know, it was really hard when the team was all the way in Worcester to bring a player up and reward them. But our GM will, you know, if a guy's doing well, he'll bring him up, let him do a skate, get an NHL payday, and then they'll play. They'll actually sometimes go play with the Barracuda. We're building a new arena, so right now we play in the Cuda play in the SAP, mm-hmm. which is kind of difficult. I mean, you know, it's 17,000 seats, and you know, on Teddy Bear night we might pull 8,000 in.
Yeah,
but we're building a brand new arena in San Jose, connected to the Sharks practice facility. Mm-hmm. It's gonna be a 4,000 seat arena, which is perfect.
Perfect.
You know, and so I mean, the facility is gonna be unbelievable. They already have 4 sheets. They're adding a 5th sheet and the 4,000 seat arena. So I think you're gonna be seeing a lot of championships and especially youth hockey stuff is gonna be in San Jose for a few years.
Yeah. The one time I actually played in like nationals, I was a peewee. I was in the quarterfinal and we lost the San Jose Junior Sharks. Fucking ruined my life.
Sorry about that.
Day, all you do is remember that game.
Yeah, seriously.
What I was going to ask you, I know you brought it up before with like the whole COVID and everything like that. I guess like I'm kind of curious just because like I've been playing hockey and I've been like dealing with this whole COVID thing, and I see like what the doctors and what the training staff and what everybody goes through. And it's like, I guess like what's like one thing are you looking forward to being back, and do you see that happening soon, or do you see like a continuation of like you being away from the players for a long period of time?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, one thing I'm happy about was, you know, I got swabbed before every game last year. So I probably got swabbed 50, 60 times, which any of you guys have been swabbed, that's not a pleasant experience. I think it'll allow me to do my job a little bit better because I will be down in the locker room a little bit more this year. You know, I like everybody, it's going to be hard to go back that quickly to normal. But right now we have a normal schedule. Right now we're not COVID testing. So I think it's going to be as close as we can back to normal.
Well, I hope so. And on that note, we want to get into a segment that we love to do on this podcast called the Matzo Ball Minute Questions.
Okay.
What's the most rewarding/challenging part of your job?
Getting people back to what they want to do, you know, whether that's, you know, playing professional sports or whether or not that's, you know, a 75-year-old lady who wants to get back to her pickleball. You know, everybody has their own level of what they want. And part of the reason I do what I do and why I went into the field I went into is it's a lifestyle field. You know, it's not really dealing with life and death. You know, they made fun of sports medicine doctors in that movie you mentioned, but it is important. You know, it's important for, it's as important for that lady getting back to pickleball as it is for the pro guy.
Well, it's great you say that, honestly, because I was going to ask you throughout the interview, I was going to ask, like, you know, especially when you're working like more like with trauma or whatever you said before, like, do you feel more pressure working on like athletes or people with more, you know, more to their name than you do just the normal Joe Schmo? And I mean, you just answered the question right there, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is great. Let's move on. David, what?
No, it's fine. You like answered your own question.
No,
that was funny.
What's your I know you were at the Air Force for a little bit. What was your favorite experience there?
My favorite experience in the Air Force. Boy, I don't know if it's favorite.
Maybe most memorable. Most memorable.
Interesting.
Most memorable was 9/11.
Wow.
So I was just a quick history on that. I was stationed in Germany when the USS Cole occurred.
Oh, shit.
Down in Yemen. we all those guys got set up the launch to where I was. I was the surgeon in charge when all those guys came up. We realized afterwards that we did not have a forward medical team in that area. So me and a small group of people were sent down and we were stationed in Bahrain. And then 9/11 happened. And the one thing I remember, and this is about as political as I'll get, you know, people, they talk about flyover country. And I just remember watching these young guys in Marine uniforms mobilizing themselves and just thinking, boy, give me a 19-year-old Iowa farm boy wearing a Marine uniform, and I'll show you a guy who's going to dedicate his life to what he really truly believes. And it made me feel good knowing that those type of people exist. And I wish more people knew those people type of people existed. But that was you know, not a fun memory, but that was one of the strongest memories.
Yeah. Crazy, absolutely crazy. What's the your trick? You know, I mean, I figured, I feel like your hours obviously are much better than what they used to be. But, you know, when they were crazy, I guess, what's your trick or your go-to for balancing the crazy hours that doctors have to go through on a daily basis?
Well, I mean, it definitely gets better than when it was in residency. When I was a resident, when it was a lot, when it was 100 hours a week, you learn how to deal with it. I used to, I figured a way to not go into REM sleep, I guess. Mm-hmm. I would sleep with my shoes on. And what? Light really? On. Yeah, because you got to be. If you get, I just found out that if you went into REM sleep, it would kill you. So you got these little short, like not deep sleeps, but it was the way you survived. And you can learn it. You can learn how to do that. And, you know, I had my little tricks of not allowing myself to really get into deep sleep.
Are you woken up that often in the residency?
In residency, you are. I mean, you know, there were days I get 100, 150 pages a day. You know, I remember when I did my general surgery rotation, my trauma doc said the call schedule is easy. If you wake up here, go home. And if you wake up at home, come here.
Yeah. Good model to live by. Last one for you. When you're not working, what's your ideal day off look like?
Probably going to the beach and going for a out here in California, going for a walk. There's some really beautiful cliff walks. Going with my wife and my new puppy. It's probably...
what do you got?
I got a 10-month-old Labrador yellow lab.
What's the name?
Rosie.
Rosie. I like that.
Yeah.
I like
that. Yeah.
Well, that's Doc, great. We got one more question for you before we let you go. But actually, before I ask you this final question, is there anything you want to plug or... you know, any organizations you work with or anything that you want to give a shout out to?
Well, I mean, there was one thing I did want to mention and maybe this, I don't know if you got, you know, this is a little bit more serious and a little bit more Jewish, if that's
yeah,
okay. Go.
Rip it. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, yeah. Cause we really didn't talk about Maccabi.
Yeah. Please.
So, this is one of the things that struck me the most at Maccabi and I'll never forget it. There was a night where, I can't remember the name of the organization, but it was a night where you guys were supposed to get a talk from somebody who was trying to promote Israel and all that kind of stuff. And the open team was not taking it very seriously. And you guys were actually drinking a little too much. And people were a bit upset. They're like, these guys aren't taking it serious, blah, blah, blah. And then they brought you all in a room and you guys got in a circle and you guys were still kind of joking and laughing. And then I don't remember who, but one guy opened up the floodgates and said something along the lines of, you know, this is the first time in my life playing hockey where I'm not worried that one of you guys are going to say something derogatory about Jews. I feel so comfortable with you guys. This is like a dream come true. And then the floodgates open and every guy started telling a little story, you know, not like outright anti-Semitic stuff, but just, it was so wonderful for you guys to be together and feel completely comfortable for a moment in time that maybe you don't necessarily get on, you know, on other teams. And I was really proud to hear you guys say that. I still take that with me. I want my son to have that experience when he goes this summer, you know, cause it is a reminder that there is still a little underlying stuff and to feel safe is important for anybody. And it was great for you guys to feel safe in Israel.
Yeah, no, especially in today's world. And I know a lot of us still talk about that trip and that moment. Actually, I do remember that. And, you know, there obviously were some moments where some of us drank a little too much and we had to talk them into calming down and being respectful. But I don't think I was one of those, luckily. I could have been. I don't remember. But yeah, no, there was, like you said, like it's just really the first time where, you know, especially where we grew up, obviously it's like a, you know, very Jewish population where I'm from in Long Island, New York. And whenever I got to the hockey rink, I was like, it was the one time in my life where I wasn't in that, you know, popular or not popular, but in the popular, like what's the word I'm looking for? Where I wasn't
Jewish.
Yeah. Where I wasn't the common, you know, population. And it was always weird to me because I just like kind of grew up thinking like, oh, everyone must be Jewish. But when I got to the rink, it was the one place where I was like, wait, why am I being like made fun of all the time? But I'm not trying to like say that it like scarred me, but it was really nice to be in a room full of kids who just like had the same background and went through the same things and like basically just were the same kind of people and had the same upbringing. It like just was an initial bond that Jewish people have. And that was going to kind of lead me into the final question, actually. So I'm glad that you kind of touched on that. But for you, I guess, you know, as someone who didn't grow up Jewish, you know, what have you noticed from the Jewish community itself? And I guess the hockey community also, because that's why we started this podcast. Cappy and I both felt like the Jewish community was very similar to the hockey community in that everyone like knows each other and everyone's looking out for each other, just like a very tight-knit community and somewhat of a fraternity. So for you, now that you're a new member of the Jewish community and a part of the hockey community, like what has it meant to you, I guess, in your career and just in your everyday life?
Yeah, I think what I tell people whenever I get a question, I'm like, you know, what's the difference between Roman Catholic and becoming Jewish? I said, you know, in Roman Catholicism, a lot of what you're believing is what you're told. And there's good and bad about that. And what I really liked about Judaism was that, you know, the very fact that you can question things and you can, you know, two Jews in a room and you'll have three opinions kind of thing. I really love that about about Judaism, you know, and I do think it's a tight knit community. In fact, you know, when I remember I was talking to one dad who was going to go out try out for the Maccabi tryout. And I go, well, tell me more about your son. And he's like, well, you know, he's kind of an A level player and he was on the younger age. And I go, look, I'll tell you right now, your son's not going to make the team. OK, but go to the tryouts. Yeah. I go, you need your son to go to the tryouts so he can see that there's some really good Jewish ice hockey players and that you're not alone. And we need to keep building on this community and, you know, shake some hands, learn some names. Cause you know, sometimes, hey, the names, not every Jewish player out there, last name is Goldberg. You know, my kids are Abene, you know? So you know, one of the things is funny is at those trials, a lot of guys will be like, wait a minute, you're Jew-? Like they didn't even know the other player was Jewish. Mm-hmm. So I think it's important that, that, the Maccabi ice hockey community continues to build upon that. You know, it's important to know that the Hughes brothers are Jewish, right?
Yeah. And our boy Foxy back here.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. He's a Jew.
But I'm definitely trying to go back to the Maccabi games next summer. I've been telling Cappy to go. He was supposed to be in our team actually in 2017, but
did you feel like, Laz, did you feel like you were on like full court miracle when you were at the Maccabi games?
Kinda. It's that we lost. I think they win, right?
It was fun, but boy, it was intense, man. I mean, those 10,000 fans. It was a great game. You know, I told people when I tell people about the level of player out there, the jokes, you know, famous, the shortest books in the world, famous Jewish sports legends. I'm like, I tell people, I go, you know, this was not Jewish intramural hockey in the desert.
Yeah.
I mean, this was legit hockey. Each team had, you know, D1, D3 guys. They haven't announced the full roster yet, but this team is going to have some high level hockey players. You know, there's some really good Jewish ice hockey players right now. And I think they're going to be good role models.
No, 100%. The Jewish hockey community is extremely talented. But honestly, Doc, I respect what you're saying, especially about the Jewish community and like, with the Catholic religion as well. Like, I mean, I went to Catholic school for a year when I built it away from home. I tell people all the time. And thankfully I had probably the best religion teacher of all time, who was very understandable. And man, it's crazy how similar the religions are. And I tell people all the time, you know, there's not too much that's far off. And it's pretty cool that I was able to learn some of that. So,
well, I mean, one of you guys mentioned Sebastian Maniscalco.
Yeah.
One of his jokes is, you know, Judaism and Catholicism, you know, same corporation,
different division. Yep. I love that. That's my favorite, like my favorite bit. Seriously. I'm actually going to go see him live next month. I'm so excited. He's the best.
Yeah, he's going to play the Garden.
Yeah. You and your wife must love him.
No, we love him. he's great.
Well, he's got the Jewish wife. So yeah. He kind of gets it. Yeah. Awesome. But Doc, we really appreciate you doing this, and you know, we'd love to, you know, see you in person hopefully sometime soon. I don't know if you're ever going to be out here, or obviously, you know, you'll maybe be near Cap, but
hopefully for the right reasons, not the wrong.
For the right reasons. Exactly.
There you go.
But thank you so much. This was awesome.
All right, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right.
Welcome back, everybody. We hope you guys love that interview with Anthony Abene, our doc, our new favorite doc. He was amazing. Honestly, all the doctors I've met like throughout my hockey career in general have just been such such nice guys. And it was cool to hear like his experience and like why he got into hockey, because he really didn't even play hockey growing up and stuff like that, which is cool.
Yeah, I also like that he opened up about that moment in Israel that I honestly like, you know, kind of forgot about, but I do have a vivid memory of it. You know, a lot of people just connected to Israel and connected to Judaism, like spiritually on that trip. And, you know, there's obviously little bits and pieces that people remember that other people don't. So, you know, I thought it was cool that he kind of like, you know, called us out a little bit too. Cause, on that trip, we like to have fun and we drank a little bit and stuff, but, you know, there were times where we were supposed to be serious and there were times where we could have fun. So, I was happy that he kind of spoke about that memory because, you know, after he talked about it, I do remember sitting in that room and talking to everybody and kind of opening up, which is really cool. And that's kind of like the point of going there, you know, to connect spiritually.
Yeah. Very cool about the whole thing about Israel. And it was cool to hear his experience about Israel. And honestly, I was going to tell our listeners that if you want to hear like another interview that, that we did with like the one with Nate Thompson, they both, you know, have a lot of similarities. Obviously, you know, Nate transitioned.
That was right.
Nate transitioned into Judaism and stuff like that, and so did Doc. So, or Doc's in the process, I guess. So both very cool, and once again, I want to thank Doc so much for coming on.
Yeah, same here. And I also want to thank one of our sponsors, Mindset Wellness CBD. Like we always talk about, they're a full spectrum CBD company infused with terpenes and vitamins that can provide all natural anxiety relief. We use them all the time. I love my happy gummies. I love my focus gummies during the workday. And lately I've been loving the calm gummies the most because I've been a little stressed out with the weather getting shitty in New York. I know a lot of people can get you know, seasonal depression. So, you know, go to mindsetwellness.com and use our code LATKE10, LATKE10 for 10% off plus free shipping of your order. Get your calm gummies, get your happy gummies, get your rest gummies, get your focus gummies, get all of them, because seasonal depression is a real thing. And, you know, it would suck to be a little depressed in the winter without Mindset Wellness. So they're here to help. Just go to mindsetwellnesscbd.com.
We love our gummies. We love our mindset.
I think that's going to wrap it up for this week's episode. We got another good one coming for you next week. We love you guys and have a good weekend.